Jacksonville joins the protests against chaos and corruption in Puerto Rico. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect, and I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening. And just ahead this morning, how local activists are calling for regime change in Puerto Rico. You can join us. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, local teens helping refugees thrive right here in Florida. All of that and more just ahead. But first this hour, protests erupted across Florida last night and the country. They joined with a massive protest in Puerto Rico that shut down a major highway, calling for the ouster of Governor Ricardo Rossello. Here's what it sounded like last night outside the Duval County Courthouse. Protesters took to the streets after a series of crude, sexist, and homophobic chat messages between the embattled governor and his closest aides were made public earlier this month. Puerto Ricans are fed up with government corruption, the island's debt crisis, and a very slow response to provide relief after Hurricane Maria. Maria Garcia is with the local group Jacksonville Community Action. They organized last night's downtown protest, and she's on the line now. Maria, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And here's our question to callers. What are your comments and questions about the protests in Puerto Rico that have spread here to the mainland? Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And Maria, last night the protests in Puerto Rico became massive. You even saw pop star Ricky Martin leading some of them. Hundreds of thousands of people there shut down a major highway, and they've turned out across Florida, too, including Jacksonville. This anger has been a long time coming. What are the major causes of the frustration over the situation in Puerto Rico?
So really, the major cause is that it really all started happening when the rest of the chat that was between the governor and his associates got leaked, and it became evident that the governor was misusing public funds that were meant for the hurricane, and his cabinet as well were misusing funds meant for hurricane relief. It became evident that the governor really took lightly and joked about the amount of deaths on the island as a result of Hurricane Maria, over 4,000, and he actually made comments like making light of the bodies piling up at the morgue. And it's just the stories that I hear are basically, you know, Puerto Ricans went through basically the worst experience of their lives, and just coming across hard evidence that the governor and those in charge did not care and stood to profit off of their pain and misery, basically.
And what do the text messages show in terms of how the money is allegedly being misused?
So there, the text messages show that there were government contracts that were being you know, handed out to benefit the members of their party. They also show that there were attempts made to have the aid distributed out by the political party of the governor in order to make their party look better. And I mean, it's pages and pages and pages, but it basically just shows a real contempt for the people, and also that these people knew what they were doing, and they knew that they were, you know, profiting. They also, you know, flat out said, we even got our own people, took our own people for idiots, meaning, you know, like the people from their own party. So they knew what they were doing. They knew that they were tricking people. They knew that they would stand to profit. And also one of the, you know, comments on there confirmed a lot of people's beliefs in basically what is called disaster capitalism, where, you know, disaster strikes to a certain area, and investors move in once the working people that were there can no longer inhabit, and build, you know, expensive properties to make money. So, I mean, there was literally one of the members of the chat saying, you know, I've seen the future, one in which there are no Puerto Ricans, meaning, you know, everyone basically off the island, and Puerto Rico becoming, I guess, becoming a state in his eyes. And, you know, the island is for the use of people, basically a playground for the rich. So, you know, I mean, there's over 800 pages. I couldn't quote from every single one of them, but it's evident that there's a lot of corruption.
It's 549-2937 to join us. And this anger has been building for a long time, hasn't it? The situation over Hurricane Maria was that the last straw for people finding out how that has supposedly been mishandled? Corruption and the island's debt crisis, yeah. Those have been issues in Puerto Rico for years. And so many Puerto Ricans come here to Florida, Maria, because they just can't find opportunities in Puerto Rico. So they come here to the mainland. Is that your situation too?
So I was born here, but basically my mother came over here because she trained to be a respiratory therapist. But the wages that were being offered in Puerto Rico were not enough to sustain a family on. And a lot of the stories that were shared at yesterday's protest and last Wednesday's protest were of the same type of situation, where people were saying that, you know, after the hurricane, they had felt they had no choice to come over here because there was just no opportunities, no money to be made. The healthcare system is collapsing over there. And, you know, it's something that's been on the forefront of, you know, Puerto Rico's minds for a long time, but this is basically the only time we've been confronted with concrete evidence of this corruption that's causing this. And, you know, it's clear now that it is the goal of the governor and of people with his mindset that they want to make Puerto Rico uninhabitable by the average citizen so that, you know, individuals with money and corporations with money can come in and basically just turn it into a playground for themselves.
And if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Maria Garcia of Jax Community Action about the burgeoning protests in Puerto Rico and here on the mainland. It's 549-2937. Now, before these chat messages leaked out, FBI agents did arrest two ranking Rosello officials for allegedly directing contracts worth millions of dollars to politically connected firms, as you've been talking about. Yesterday on Fox News, Governor Rosello struggled to name even one supporter of his embattled administration. Let's listen to this.
There are folks that have supported me.
Who specifically is supporting you today?
The rule. There are people.
Okay, you could
just
give me one name?
See them out there. There is a protest. Well, I've talked
just one name,
to people from different groups. Well, a lot of people from the administration.
Governor, you're not able to give me the name of one person in Puerto Rico who supports you continuing as governor. Is that correct?
He did eventually come up with a name with great difficulty. Maria, the other night, Rosello said he won't seek re-election next year, but he intends to serve out his term. That's not good enough for the protesters, is it?
No, it's not. His continued claim is that he was elected by the people and he wants to continue his term. However, it is overwhelming in numbers the people that want him out. And it has been, you know, repeated over and over again that these protests are not partisan. There are people that belong to the governor's political party that, you know, that want him out. There are people of all, you know, basically all stripes that want this man out, because it's very evident that he does not have the capacity to lead. It's very evident that he stood to gain from the hurricane, and he stood to gain from the policies that were in place before, the economic policies that are basically strangling the everyday Puerto Rican as a result of a debt that really they did not cause.
And there's a long history to Puerto Rico's debt crisis. Puerto Ricans tend to feel it's largely due to mainland policy out of Washington. Isn't that right?
Well, we basically have a, you know, colonial relationship with the United States, in that we pay more taxes into the United States than what comes back to us by a large amount. We are inscribed in the Jones Act, in which anything that comes out of Puerto Rico has to be, has tariffs, and anything coming in has tariffs, added to it. So it's basically just like I would almost say a parasitic relationship with the United States for a long time. And people are tired of it. Now, what they want for the future, their relationship, that remains to be worked out. But basically, it is, it's a huge factor in what's happening is our relationship, obviously, with the mainland.
All right, let's go to some calls now for Maria Garcia of Jack's Community Action, one of many protest groups around Florida and the nation joining in the widespread calls for change in Puerto Rico. Lots of Puerto Ricans here. We want to hear from you, and we want to hear from everyone who has a comment or a question. It's 549-2937. Eduardo is in Clay County. Eduardo, good morning.
Good morning. Good show as always. Yes, unfortunately, the problem with Puerto Rico has been going on for decades now to cause overspending by the local government. The governor has, well, his comments were really totally inappropriate, no doubt about it. But even the mayor of Puerto Rico, which is in an opposite party, different party than the governor, has been caught in all kind of corruption also, including involving federal agents arresting people for that. It's unfortunate because one of the effects of all this mess going on now is that the tourism is dropping. Cruise lines are canceling stops in San Juan, and this is just making things worse. I will kind of disagree a little bit with you, with your guest there. Puerto Rico is perfectly free to make many of their own decisions, including if they are if they wish to become an independent country. Nobody's going to stop them from that. The problem is every time they have a referendum, the majority of the Puerto Ricans, by far, over 90%, don't want to do that, which is, of course, they're right. It's one of the best, by the way, the best Christmas I ever had in my life was in Puerto Rico. I recommend that to everybody. But anyway, I just wanted
why,
to say
why was it the best Christmas of your life?
Oh, my gosh, because you go there from Thanksgiving until January 6th with the King's of Nativity. It's every day. It's really a party. The Puerto Rican people are very warm. Everybody prepares themselves for what they call the asaltos, which everybody has a lot of food and drinks at the house because you never know when people are going to show up. And I mean 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning in the weekdays.
Okay.
It's a lot of fun.
All right. Eduardo and Clay, thanks for that. Maria Garcia, what about his comments, especially his observation that Puerto Rico has never voted to essentially break away from the U.S., no longer be a territory of the U.S.?
So basically, this is one of the major, factors in the protest now is that we want it to be, nonpartisan. So I think what a lot of people kind of don't understand is that the way that Puerto Rican kind of partisan politics go is that the political parties are based on mainly, instead of economic policy, like here, it's a lot of the party's basis is on what relationship Puerto Rico should have with the United States. So we have the one party, the I guess it's called the New Progressive Party, but they're considered the more conservative, who, when they want statehood. They have the party that's considered the more, traditional Democrat Party is, and these are just the main parties, you know, that want to remain Commonwealth. And then they have the parties, the party that independence, pro-independence. So it's, it's always hard to get a consensus. And then, within that too, there's a lot of propaganda from either side. A lot of the arguments against independence is that, we wouldn't be able to make it. We don't have the economic power. We'd be all by ourselves. And then the pro-statehood arguments, that basically being a state would entitle us to more money, more resources. So it's always a big tug of war. Mm-hmm. And part of the messaging in these protests is that Puerto Rican people are tired of the partisan politics. It's these protests aren't about any type of color or logo of a political party. The people are just tired of the corruption, and they're tired of this merry-go-round of different political parties in power, but they are not serving the people. They're not doing the job that they are expected to do.
We'll go to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. Let's get to some emails. Here's one from Andrew. If the governor of Puerto Rico is forced to resign, who would replace him? And there is talk of impeaching him in the Puerto Rican Legislative Assembly today as well. So who would be in the line of succession, Maria?
So I believe in the line of succession, and you'll have to excuse me because I'm over here, so I'm not 100% familiar with the the legislative process of the impeachment process of Puerto Rico, but I believe it would be similar to here, in which it goes down to the next in authority to be the replacement. Now it's getting difficult because everyone is kind of jumping ship in the administration. But something that still has to be, I guess it has to be, if it goes through an impeachment process, it has to be worked out by the legislature of Puerto Rico of who would be the, successor.
Let me ask you as a follow-up, Puerto Ricans are increasingly a political force here in Florida. Mm-hmm. Both parties highly covet your votes. President Trump and his administration have come under fire for the way they've handled the response to Hurricane Maria. He tweeted falsely earlier this year that Puerto Rico got more than $90 billion in hurricane aid. It wasn't nearly that much.
Mm-hmm.
The response was slow and sluggish at best. There are still people without clean water, electricity on the island a year and a half after Maria.
Exactly.
And so my question now is, amid all this outrage against the governor, why have Puerto Ricans not protested Washington and the federal response as well to how Maria was handled?
So there has been, protests. Unfortunately, they just haven't been covered. But there has been a lot of actions against the federal response. Demonstrations to clear. I mean, it was even a fight just to clear up the fact that there was over 4,000 people that died, because the original, death toll was just the people that died in the immediate, hurricane. But the when the numbers started to skyrocket was after the hurricane, literally just because people were, going without water, without food, without their medical treatment that they needed. And these are elderly, these are young, these were patients that were already sick. And so the messaging has been out there. Unfortunately, being with what you just said, Puerto Rican political force. So,
and how do you see Puerto Ricans as a political force in Florida, particularly as we head into the 2020 election? President Trump is narrowly favored to win Florida again. Mm-hmm. We will watch how the results play out. How do you see the Puerto Rican operating as a factor increasingly here in North Florida as well, although certainly more so in Central Florida?
So, I mean, as I stated before, Puerto Ricans have, we're not a monolith. We have a variety of political leanings, you know, all the way from, you know, far left, you know, conservative, you know, everything in between. But I would say we're a political force because we are, you know, well acquainted with corruption, and we are a people that, you know, we're not going to stand for it. And mainly, and a lot of it is with us, this young generation. You know, we aren't voting as the previous generations did along party lines. And also, you know, I think even the previous generations are starting to wake up. It's no longer about party lines. We are looking for people that are going to represent our best interests. And also, you know, I was calling to people and the protests, even here in Jacksonville, local, you know, we can see firsthand, the Puerto Ricans saw firsthand the response to Maria, and how slow it was and how sluggish it was. And, you know, I was explaining the same thing happened here after, I believe it was Hurricane Irma, with the community of Ken Knight Drive. Total lack of response by the city. I visited there, and it looked like a third world country here in America. I mean, houses completely, you know, flooded out, trash, no trash pickup, people without electricity, without access to, you know, clean water. And it was here in this country. So, you know, we're trying to send a message that we're not going to accept this type of irresponsibility from our leaders anywhere, whether it's on, you know, in Puerto Rico or on the mainland. You know, we know that people stand at this point to profit from natural disasters. And as global warming becomes an increasing threat, we know that we have to be vigilant. And anywhere that this happens, we have to, you know, form a response and come to the defense of those people who need it the most.
And going beyond the Puerto Rican protests, that is the overall mission of JAC's Community Action. Tell us quickly a little bit more about your group.
So Jacksonville Community Action Committee is a black and brown led organization that is basically fighting for the rights of our marginalized communities. Right now we have been mainly focused on the Northside community because it's been the most historically impoverished, most historically over-policed, and underdeveloped. So as we bring the, you know, newly arrived, you know, Puerto Rican people into the fold, you know, with us, we are trying to stand in solidarity, because as these protests have shown in Puerto Rico, that we are stronger together as a people. You know, and when it comes down to it, if we all come together, like, our demands will be heard, and that we can accomplish great things together. So that's basically our message to the Puerto Rican community as a whole. But, you know, this is, even though it's something that's happening on the island, we still know that it's important to take a stand and represent, even from all the way over here.
Maria Garcia, she's with JAC's Community Action Committee. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me again.
Well, three Puerto Rican musicians have released a protest song about all this that is racking up millions of downloads. It's called Sharpening the Knives, Afilando los Cuchillos, and it was released July 17th on YouTube. Let's listen as we go to break.
Esto va para los artistas internacionales y las banderitas de Puerto Rico en las redes sociales. Ninguno de nosotros, los supuestos bandoleros, está acusado de fraude, robo, lavado de dinero. Con todo lo que han robado estos politiqueros, pintamos las paredes del Caribe entero. Y aunque esto no le caiga bien a la gente, pa' decírtelo en un chat, pa' eso lo digo de frente. Se tiran a los caseríos, a los puntos de droga, les rompen las casas y por ellos nadie aboga. Nosotros hacemos lo mismo sin delicadeza. Estos criminales criminales, le hacemos una redada en Fortaleza. Si el pueblo entero quiere que te vayas cara dura y tú te quedas, entonces estamos en dictadura. Solo te apoya tu esposa, la exmodelo, la que piensa que 100 años de soledad la escribió Coelho. Y así son los pocos que te siguen brutos, pero tranqui, afilar navajas, toma un minuto. Somos el rugido de la bandera de Puerto Rico con todos sus tejidos exigiendo tu renuncia.
I'm Lindsay Kilbride, host of WGCT's podcast, What It's Like. It starts with some of the best conversations recorded in Jacksonville by StoryCorps.
I remember being on the school bus and passing by and seeing you outside. You were under the addiction at the time.
And then I go deeper into the story. How do you cope with the guilt you still feel? How do you cope with that? Subscribe to What It's Like from WGCT wherever you get your podcasts. By the time today's babies are 80 years old, the sea is projected to have risen up to 6.6 feet. So what's being done to protect life on the first coast? On ADAPT from WJCT, you'll find stories about adaptation by everyone from the Navy to realtors and the city of Jacksonville. Join us now at adaptflorida.org.
WJCT's Jaguar Season Parking is still available. Be part of the coolest tailgating downtown. Includes paved space, indoor bathroom access. Contact 358-6327 or log on to wjct.org/parking. Reserve your space today.
From doo-wop and oldies to acoustic music, listen to After Hours Monday through Friday at 9 p.m. only on 89.9 FM, your community, your world, your music.
Welcome back. Well, recent federal funding cuts forced the closing of World Relief. It was one of the three refugee resettlement groups here in Jacksonville. World Relief had operated in Northeast Florida for 29 years. One organization working to fill the void created by that closing was actually started by a high school student. Chase Magnano is a rising senior at Ponte Vedra High School and one of the founders of Jax Thrive. Now, this is a youth-led nonprofit with a mission to inspire and educate refugee children here on the First Coast. Chase Magnano, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
Thanks for being with us. And now here's our question to callers. What do you think is the best response we can make here in Florida to the refugee crisis? It's 549-2937. Give us a call. All right, Chase, this all started a year and a half ago or so when you made an appearance on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, isn't that right? The WizKids edition?
Yes, I did. So I competed on that in August and aired in October of 2017. And then from there, I knew I wanted to do something more with this money than, you know, just spend it on a shopping spree. And so that's kind of where my work with, I'd done a little bit of volunteering with World Relief over the summer. And I wanted to continue that and kind of find some way to make my own impact.
How much did you win from your appearance?
I took home $50,000.
That's a lot of money. Okay, so that helped you found Jax Thrive.
Yes.
And Jax Thrive, Thrive stands for Teens Helping Refugees Integrate Via Engagement. So it's a teen-to-teen, peer-to-peer kind of organization you came up with, right?
Yes. So we've actually, since starting in about November of 2017, we have now had over 200 volunteers to provide almost 5,000 hours towards our refugee youth population in a almost always one-on-one peer-to-peer contact.
Where did the refugee kids come from? All over? What countries?
Yeah, so they really come from all over the world, but we've definitely seen specifically from Democratic Republic of Congo, from Rwanda, Eritrea, And then we've had a few from Southeast Asia, and then a few from the Middle East, Iran, Syria.
And what was it about your experience at World Relief, which unfortunately has closed its doors, that educated you about the plight of refugees and motivated you to get involved this way?
Definitely. So over the summer, World Relief hosts a summer camp to kind of help the kids that have just moved here accelerate their English, math skills, and give them a better chance at succeeding in America. So what initially we wanted to do was just continue this program throughout the school year and just kind of keep this vital resource going so that they could keep using it and keep going and keep growing stronger and better. But unfortunately, 2 years ago, they also received a federal funding cut and were unable to continue this program throughout the year. And that's kind of where Jack's Thrive stepped in as a means of filling this void.
And you've only been in operation 2 years. You've gotten hundreds of kids from 9 area high schools and even a university to volunteer thousands of hours of time. You've helped dozens of refugee students. What's that like for all of you?
It's really incredible just to see. Sometimes I'll still think about the first day that we started up, and it was, you know, still a low name. So it was just my founder, Grace Freeman, and I. It was just our friends that were there. And, you know, we were like, hey, guys, you really need to come to this. You really need to come to this, and getting everyone excited enough to come, to the point where, you know, now I'll have random people like text me and say, hey, I'd love to volunteer. We go to school together. I don't really know you, but it'd be so much fun. I've heard great things. And or people from other schools, or, you know, kids that get really excited at other schools, like, hey, can we start a club? And just that incredible development over the 2 years, it's just mind-boggling to see how much, like, just interacting with these kids, it shows, like, just they're exactly the same as us, and they want the same things, they need the same things, and it's just to see this connection is just truly incredible.
It's 549-2937 to join us as we learn about Jack's Thrive, founded by kids. Okay, there are thousands of refugee families in this area. At the same time, the flow of refugees into this country is slowed to a trickle, primarily due to the Trump administration's policies. The other day, an official with the White House said they want to slow that flow to zero, to get the number of refugees entering America to net zero. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that?
I think that America is a stronger country, and historically, we have accepted lots of refugees. And I think that inviting refugees into our country is not only a way to kind of, you know, do our part in the world, but also a way to make us stronger. These people coming in have been through incredible hardships, and they're extremely hardworking. And I think that we can, with refugees, we can either, you know, almost see them as an investment. We can invest in the people coming to our country that are hardworking, that want to work. Or we can turn our back on them. And I think there's two ways we can attack the problem.
So much of the oxygen and the media attention has been about people coming to the southern border and trying to present themselves to seek asylum. But the reality is that refugees tend to come from other countries even more commonly than south of our border. They come from, as you said, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Eritrea, and other countries. And the teenagers you've worked with often come into this country not speaking a word of English and having been through trauma. So can you share some stories of some of the teens you've met, and what did you learn about their experiences?
Definitely. So I think one important distinction that we make before we start is that of an immigrant versus a refugee. An immigrant is someone that comes here by choice. They want a new job. They want maybe a fresh start, but it's really by choice. No one's forcing them. A refugee is someone that has faced imminent persecution, imminent fear of death in their home country, and they need to leave either for persecution based on religion, social groups, social class, a variety of things. But these people physically cannot stay in their country, or they will be killed. So that's just an important distinction to make before we start. But then, so continuing what you're saying, any great stories. And I think there's one that really just, it speaks to me on so many levels is, so we have one girl, her name's Bedora, and she came, and I remember she's been with us for the entire 2 years, which is kind of unique as the kids have kind of come and gone, over the time. And to see the development that she's made is truly incredible. She started and she was very quiet. She sat in the back of the class. She didn't say too much. She was very, very kept to herself. And over the 2 years, you can just see she'll engage with you so much more. She's so much more excited to come, and to the point where after working with some of our volunteers last year, she actually competed in and got second place in her school science fair, which was just so incredible to see this girl and how far she's come in such a relatively short amount of time.
It's really heartwarming to hear these kinds of stories and see you, a high schooler, really taking a leading role on this here in Northeast Florida. I don't think people in America really understand the scope of the refugee crisis right now. There are more displaced people that have been thrown into refugee status around the world than at any other time in modern history. Millions of people have been displaced due to war and other hardships, and the majority of them are not coming from Central and South America. And so at this time in history, it's just an incredibly large number of people that need help. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, our government is saying we're going to close the doors to all refugees by 2020. That's the goal. Do you anticipate getting political with JAGS Thrive? Or are you more focused on the humanitarian aspects of this crisis?
All right. So I think the biggest thing with JAGS Thrive is I wouldn't say that JAGS Thrive is a political organization really at all. I think our goal is, like you said, kind of humanitarian, but also to just show that I think Refugium has been very politicized. And it doesn't have to be like when you meet the kids, you can see that it's just a bond that forms that's unlike any other. And I think that it's such an abstract concept. And our goal is more just to say, hey, look, come over here, spend a day volunteering with us, see what it's really like, kind of talk to the kids, listen to their stories. And I think when you make a personal connection with it, it becomes far less of a political issue and more of just kind of a personal humanitarian thought.
If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Chase Magnano. He's a rising senior at Ponte Vedra High School and the founder of JAGS Thrive. 549-2937 to join the show. As we talk about the refugee crisis, Andrew emails the show, as long as they don't have a record of violent crimes and are willing to work, we should welcome refugees.
Thank you for that comment, Andrew. That's something else we can get into, is the vetting process to become a refugee. So on average, to be vetted for a U.S. refugee takes 18 to 24 months, oftentimes far more. It's an incredibly laborious process. And I think there's a lot of fear of we don't know who these people are, but we really do. We have an incredible vetting process. And it's truly only a fraction of the people that apply for refugee status are actually granted that in America. As you were saying, there are 70.8 million people that have been forcibly displaced in the world, nearly one person every 2 seconds. And there are millions of, so that is added up to 25.9 million refugees in the world. And so if only a fraction of these are coming into America, and the fraction that have undergone this extreme vetting process. So a history, the violence among them is extraordinarily low.
With all of that said, you have gotten hundreds of teens to donate their time to JAGS Thrive. School's about to start again. Are you putting the call out to get more high schoolers and even university students involved in what you're doing?
Definitely. So as I continue into my senior year, eventually I'll be leaving high school. And the goal is to really make this an independent organization, autonomous. And so we're going to get there by forming clubs in other schools. So that's what we're doing, trying to do this year. And that's our big thing, is we want to expand and, you know, have a presence in every high school in our area and have them kind of take over their own individual role. So this becomes more of a community, even more of a community organization, and giving even more kids the power and efficacy to do things.
So you want chapter leaders in other high schools? Yes, essentially. Definitely. Okay. You know, I have to ask you this too. You've already done so much at such a young age. What are your college plans? What are your career goals? Because you're very impressive. There are a lot of kids out there who, you know, they haven't done, and adults who haven't done near what you've already done.
Well, ask my college plans. I think my mom would have a different answer as I've.
She's sitting over there, by the way, laughing.
Haven't been the most proactive.
I'm sure she's a proud mom, though.
Of course, I'd hope so.
Yeah.
So I'm working on that right now. I'd love to go to Northeast. That's where my family is. And in the future, I think that starting Jack's Thrive has really spoken to me. And, you know, it's kind of an abstract concept when you're in high school, when you're in middle school. What do you want to do in the future? Okay, well, I can probably name 10 jobs off the top of my head and that's it. But in reality, there's so much more out there. And in working with Jack's Thrive and the refugees, you kind of see that I think personally, I need to be working with, I want to work with people and I want to be able to make a difference. I want to be able to kind of change the world for the better and know that what I'm doing every day is going to help people's lives.
Well, I think you've done that and will obviously continue to do that. And by the way, you've already probably built some amazing organizational skills by getting this off and running and growing in Jacksonville. It's not easy. It takes a lot of work and a lot of, that takes a skill set. So kudos to you on that.
Thank you.
What was the thing that surprised you the most about building this out?
I think the thing that surprised me the most, and looking back on it, it just seems so crazy to think that way, like I did. But truly to me was just how much our community has stepped up and how engaged and excited they've become about this. I didn't really, you know, in starting it, I never really knew how the reception would be. I'd hoped and assumed it would have been good, but you know, you never know until you start something. And to see where it's come now is just so incredible, and how excited everyone gets. You know, kid, one person will text me. I always assumed he would just come, you know, for the service hours, and to hear him say, you know, anytime I have a stressful week, I know I can get through it. I know I can come on Saturday, hang out with the kids, and just hear, like, listen to them. They're so inspirational, and it's just such a great time. Just how incredible the community has been.
Yeah. High school kids need those community service hours for their college applications, but they're going to get so much more out of this than just that. And so it's jacksthrive.net, jacksthrive.net. If you're a high schooler or you're a parent of one, this is an amazing opportunity for your student. And of course, if you're a donor, you've got some money to spend. I'm sure Chase wouldn't turn that down either.
No, that'd be anything would be incredibly welcome. jacksthrive.net/donate.
Well, Chase Magnano, you're such an impressive young man. And thank you so much for joining us and sharing this with our listeners. Again, the website is jacksthrive.net. Thanks, Chase.
Thank you so much for having me.
Speaking of the next generation, up next, how you can mentor them. A conversation with Donna Orender of Generation W right after this.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday nights at 9 for Turntable Tuesday, only at the Electro Lounge on 89.9, your community, your world, your music.
Solar energy has taken off across the U.S. Now, Nashville native Jason Carney wants Black communities to know the energy savings and the green jobs are yours to be had, too.
No one controls the sun. You know, if someone could, they would, but they can't. Right now, all you need is knowledge.
I'm Mary Louise Kelly, spreading solar in Nashville this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
I'm Robin Young. In 1921, hundreds of African Americans were killed by a white mob on Black Wall Street, a thriving section of Tulsa. Some of their grandchildren are just hearing about it.
How could a something as horrible, you know, as that was, happen in a community that I grew up in and found so loving and just so peaceful?
Next time, Here and Now.
This afternoon at 1 here on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Fresh Air, sleep disorder specialist Guy Leschner, author of The Nocturnal Brain. He's seen it all. Insomnia, night terrors, narcolepsy, sleepwalking, sleep eating, sleep driving, and something called sexsomnia. We'll talk about his cases and discuss the growing body of research on our slumber. Join us today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Dependency courts are there to protect children who are abused or neglected. No parent ever wants to appear there. But some families have been threatened with losing their children to foster care just for falling behind with their kids' lunch money. What's behind the push to punish America's parents? And what should be done? Next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Finally, this hour, it is your chance to mentor a rising female leader of tomorrow. Generation W just opened up registration for its program, Generation Wow. This is a women and girls mentorship event, and it's full of energy, excitement, and positive vibes as we grow the women leaders of tomorrow. Founder Donna Orender came up with this amazing program, and she's here with more.
Good morning.
All right, everybody? I can just feel the energy level in this studio going right through the roof.
Hey, I'm so impressed with Chase and Grace and all that work they did. Jack Thrive is awesome.
Yes, it is. But let's talk about what you're doing. We were talking with an amazing young person a few minutes ago. And what you do that is so fantastic is you find opportunities to mentor young girls and young women in this community. Tell us about Generation Wow.
You know, absolutely. First of all, you know, the buzzword of today, at least the last couple of years, is about mentoring. And when you think about it, if all of us think about our everyday, the power of human connection, right? Its ability to change. We look at that and say we need a mentor connection. I think every program I'm looking at now is talking about, there's about connecting people in a time we're so starved for real quality human connection, right? Isn't it funny how digital brings us together, but it separates us? Mm-hmm. And so through the voices of girls telling us what they wanted and actually a desire of women and the interest to pay it forward, we have put together a program. We're now in our seventh year, I think. I can't believe it's gone so fast, about meaningful connections that positively impact not only the girls, our mentees, but the women as well. And we call it Generation Wow. And you know, we kick it off every year with this stupendously energetic, insightful program that connects women and girls and hopefully keeps them connected through the year.
So you need 300 women to step up to sign on and connect and mentor a young woman or girl.
Right. Now, so let's talk a little bit about mentoring. There's all different ways to mentor. And often we think about mentoring, it's scary to people. And people don't really talk about it. But after 7 years of experience, our women, and I would say men too, but we have women in this particularly, they have trepidation. Like, am I going to be good enough? Am I going to be smart enough? Am I going to be able to say the right thing? What happens if she doesn't like me? All those things that we grow up as a girl, we carry along with us. And so I'm really proud that we will be launching a national caliber mentor training program. Now that's brand new to accompany this program. I think it's really, really important that we do that.
So we can learn how to mentor.
Correct. And the other thing is women's lives are very, very busy. I always remember I am part of a founding group in New York of a mentor program. And it was a bunch of very, CEO-related women. I happened to get in this group and they go, oh, let's do something. I'm thinking we don't have enough to do. And yet we want to do more, right? It's really kind of part of
our... Yeah, they always say, if you need something done, ask a busy woman.
Right. So we have
get it done.
So we have designed this program that allows women to engage with girls in a meaningful way, but also respects their time and schedule. So when we come to Gen Wow, we have this pairing after this energetic thing, this energetic program. And we say to the women, you know, we're going to connect you with girls who have interest at you. So we align girls, like we have a huge, by the way, interest in healthcare in this community by our young women, 25%. There's technology, there's professional services, there's the arts, whatever. And then we ask them to keep in touch 2 or 3 times during the year. But through that, amazing relationships. We have amazing success stories because we know that meaningful connections positively impact both mentor and mentee. It creates for academic growth, social and economic progress, college, a look to college, it's about leadership. I mean, the amount of research around the positivity and the results here is very substantial.
So if people go to Donna's website, genwnow.com, if you're a woman who's interested in this mentoring opportunity, just go onto the website and sign up, because this will lead up to a big event in November where you'll get to meet your mentees,
correct,
learn about their lives, and build a relationship with them. This is a way that women can grow the kind of female-centered network that men have always been able to tap into for career advancement, advice, moral support. This is that.
Totally. And it's funny, I went to the Nelson Mandela celebration event the other night. It was fantastic. And I had these women coming up to me. They said, "You don't know me, but my daughter was there for 3 years. I have mentored for 3 years. I am all in. It's a great program." Now, it's not always perfect. And that's part of the things we also talk to women, right? Relationships take time in some cases. Someone might not connect here. But the presence of women, the willingness, the statement to support is life-changing. And I want to impress on all of us that how absolutely important that is. And we've also learned a lot. So we have a streamlined registration process. I've talked about our mentor training. Our pre-event resources are enhanced. We have additional guidance. The girls are also really prime because now they've all talked to each other. The word of mouth is so strong that last year we had 600 girls. We had to close registration because that's how meaningful and impactful it is to our girls and the leadership at their schools.
Okay, so sign up now, genwnow.com. For Generation Wow, and be a mentor to a girl or young woman. You will be amazed what you get out of this. And I know you just got back from, the Maccabi Games in Mexico City.
Yes.
So you're only in town for a few weeks, but you'll get to see Donna if you come to the event in November. She'll be there for that, along with a lot of other great people. So sign up for this. This is an amazing opportunity.
That's great. And we also want to thank BKS Partners and Montoya Financial because now
we're out of time. So sorry, Donna. I hate to cut you off, but we're out of time.
Okay, no problem.
That's our show. Thanks for listening. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow. 1A is up next. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.